The following edition of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. Sioux Valley Voice airs live at 10 a.m. every other Wednesday. The next live show will be on August 13th. Thanks for listening. Good morning. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, community radio for the Upper Susitna Valley. My name is Philip Manning, and you're listening to Sioux Valley Voice. My guest today is Neil Lacey, Democratic candidate for House Seat 10. We'll be discussing the campaign and taking your calls. You can join the conversation by calling 733-1200 or emailing dj@ktna.org. Neil Lacey, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Philip, for having me.
So, to get us started, I know in the intro it said House Seat 10, but of course House Seat 10 is the seat that covers the Upper Valley. So you are running to become our representative in the State House.
Yes, Philip. This district actually runs from about Trunk Road and Bogard Road in the east. It runs along the north side of Bogard Road. There's a chunk taken out of it between Church and Pittman, and it runs all the way to the Denali Park.
Okay. So let's get started with a little bit about you. Some folks may recognize the name. You have served on the Mattsu School Board.
Yes, from 2010-2013.
Okay. So give us a little bit of background on your history in the area.
I first came to Alaska in about 1967 with my dad. He was in the Air Force. We lived here for a couple of years, and then I moved south with my mother until I was a 10th grader. And I went through Wasilla High School from the 10th to the 12th grade. After that, I moved down to Kenai Soldotna to perfect my mechanical skills, and I came back to go to college. And then in 1989, I got a teaching certificate, and I taught at Wasilla High School and Colony High School until I retired in 2005.
Okay. So I guess we can go ahead and jump right in here and talk a little bit about platform. Let's start with a little bit about the race in general. There's three candidates for House Seat 10. Yourself and Roger Purcell, who's running as an independent, are the challengers, and then the incumbent is Republican Wes Keller.
Yes.
So this area, though, like you said, the district includes a chunk of Wasilla. Wasilla is a pretty red voting area. And the valley in general gets classified that way. What's your take on running against an incumbent who hasn't had a Democratic challenger in 6 years? The last time that a Democrat ran for this seat, or for what was then seat 7, was in 2008.
Well, first off, the valley, when I was a young man, was pretty much all Democratic. And I would like to bring that back. We've had some excellent Democratic legislators, Katie Hurley, Jay Kurtula. I think I'm going to win this race. And I see that happening.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about platform then. We've got some issues listed here. The issues that, and you've got a page on here on democracy.com. And the issues you have listed here are education, environment, energy, civil rights, and the economy. So if we go a little bit about, and I guess we can go into the ballot initiatives as well as part of this. So if you were to give the elevator pitch for Neil Lacey's campaign for state legislature, what would that be?
Well, first of all, we need a gas line. We do not need to sit in hydro. We need a sustainable tax structure that does not leave the citizens out. Alaska's Constitution says that the natural resources should be developed for the benefit of the citizens, and that's the way we need to have our tax structure. As far as equal rights, I think that the legislature pretty much has a waged a war on women. We need affordable health care. Women need to be able to get affordable health care. And some of the things they did last year were, quite frankly, ill-placed.
You're talking about Medicaid, abortions paid for by Medicaid and medically
necessary?
We need
to have an expansion of Medicaid to get those people that cannot get health insurance, and or that there's about 40,000 of them in the state of Alaska that are not insured. And we need to have affordable health care for all of our residents, no matter where you live.
Okay. So, you know, anytime that somebody is running to unseat an incumbent, it means that they believe that there's something that incumbent in specifically, or that the body as a whole of the legislature is not doing. You've kind of touched on that, but what else do you see? Where else in your mind is the failure in the Alaska legislature right now? You mentioned taxes.
Well, we have a $2 billion deficit. Mm-hmm. We're giving away money to entities that doesn't need it. Refineries, tax credits. If you're in business and you have a business model, you should be able to make a profit without any government handouts. And I see too many handouts.
Okay.
Our education system first of all, let me point out that the Matsu Borough has an excellent education system. As when I was on the school board, we did a lot of creative things. For instance, in this area, we have 6 charter schools. We have magnet schools. We have vocational schools. We have district-wide vocational programs at several schools. I started one at Colony High School. The homeschooling, Matsu Central, that is the largest school in the district. And as of a year ago, they were going to place an advisor from Matsu Central at Sioux Valley so we could start capturing more of the homeschooling needs in this area.
Mm-hmm. And that did happen.
So. Yes, and I personally think our school system is doing a fine job. We got the state to realize that not all young people graduate in 4 years. They do it in 5.
Hmm.
Our graduation rate started going up. We're doing positive things. In the immediate area, I'd like to see an expansion of the pre-K.
Hmm.
I'd like to see more vocational programs at Sioux Valley High School. I'd like to see a nurse at every school in this area.
Mm.
When I was on the board, they shared a nurse. I didn't like that.
Right.
They should have one nurse for every school.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, given your history, it makes sense that education would be a big topic for you. If we go back a little bit to what transpired in the last session, Senator Dunleavy, who represents this area on the Senate side, and Wes Keller in the House both carried a state constitutional amendment that would have, had it come to a vote and passed, would have allowed for public funding to benefit private education institutions.
I think, let me say this right now. I am against vouchers, period.
Okay. That's where we were headed. So.
Period. I can't get any more succinct than that.
Okay. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned Matsu schools, because everyone I talk to within the legislature, within, you know, they do kind of hold up the kind of some of the innovations and some of the work that Dr. Paramo has done as kind of an example. How does that jibe with, because when I interviewed you for last year's school board race, one of the things you talked about that was a big concern was potential for additional budget cuts. And this year, the education funding bill, it delayed the entire closure of session for days while they tried to hammer this out. What did you think of what eventually came out of that as far as adjustments to the BSA as compared to, you know, two or a 3-year block of funding?
Well, first of all, in the recent history, the legislature has been piecemealing education. They give you a little bit of money for buses. They give you a little bit of money for energy, but they don't really address the staffing cuts. When I first got on the board, we had, in lieu of layoffs, we had an early retirement program. And I think 140 teachers took advantage of that. The problem is we lost several thousand years of teaching experience in the classroom. It's a proven fact that warm bodies in a classroom help student learning. In case of here, we've lost in the Talkeetna area, we've lost several teachers at the elementary level, at the Trapper Creek, and at Sioux Valley. And we need to put more people in those positions. It's simple as that.
And so one of the big part of the discussion that came about because of that is whether that's best done through the base student allocation, which is a number that's assigned to each student that then goes through a very confusing, convoluted formula to arrive at the amount of money a school gets based on how many students it has and how rural it is, versus these block grants, like the sort of thing you're talking about. So is an increase to the BSA, is that the answer in your mind?
That's most of the answer, yes. Now, if you were to look at how they funded schools, it'd make your head spin off, because the state, let's just say Sioux Valley, for instance, they're a smaller school. Mm-hmm. They get a lot more money than, say, on a percentage-wise, but it doesn't look like it, mm-hmm. than, say, Wasilla, because they have a population of maybe 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many other little idiosyncrasies in that funding formula. I'd like to see it more equitable. I'd like to see it, the BSA, raised. To be honest with you, I think maybe we should have a permanent fund for education.
Okay.
That's been floated over the years. We need to have something stable, because as a school board member, we don't know what our budget's going to be until the borough passes one in late summer. And then, of course, you have to make decisions in a hurry. It's just the way they're doing us bad. It needs to change.
Well, and you know, that's interesting, because one of the things I've heard from the borough, and one of the things that came up in this last budget cycle with the borough, is they were kind of waiting to see what the state ended up with, yes. before they could make their decisions as well. So, yes. I mean, anytime you're dealing with, it's what, 75% of school funding comes from the state and 25% from the borough?
Thereabouts. I could be wrong. We could be wrong on those, but something in
it's a substantial majority comes from the state, mm-hmm. At the very least. So, as far as the length of session and things running over and stuff like that, I mean, what's causing this this deadlock in Juneau?
I see people wanting to try and privatize education.
Okay.
And I think that's what the crux of the whole nine yards is.
Okay.
We shouldn't privatize it. It's a public thing.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that will appear on the ballot with you.
Okay.
So one of them will appear before that, and that's the Proposition 1, which is the referendum on Senate Bill 21, which is the new oil and gas tax regime that replaced ACES, the regime that was put in place under the Palin administration. What's your take on SB 21?
We need to have a stable tax structure that does not leave the citizens out. I think we forget as a state that you and I do not own. For instance, if you found oil underneath this radio station right now, the only thing you would get out of it is whatever the fair market value of this radio station. An oil company would be getting it. So, and at statehood, the resources were delegated to the state, the federal government, the municipalities, and the native corporations. So, therefore, that was the crux of the permanent fund. So, with that being said, the state needs to develop those resources for the maximum benefit of its citizens. And I see Alaska becoming an oil colony again.
Hmm.
You know, in the early days of statehood was partially driven by the fact that outside companies were raping our fishing resources, fish traps, the whole nine yards. I see that happening now with our oil and mineral resources.
Hmm.
Now, if we're going to develop these, we also should develop them in an environmentally friendly way.
Okay. So, so you think SB 21 then does not represent a good tax structure for the people?
No.
Or okay. And so then at that point, if SB 21 were to pass, we would return to ACES, which most people will acknowledge in the legislature. People from both parties have acknowledged that it's not a perfect system.
I don't think you will ever find a system that appeals to everybody, but I don't want it to be tilted in big oil's favor.
Okay. And so you think with ACES we've got a better shot than with SB21?
Yes. The oil companies make more money up here than they do anywhere else, period.
Okay. And then on to some of the propositions that'll be on the November ballot. First, we've got the one that would effectively have marijuana in the state regulated in the same manner as alcohol.
Okay. First of all, we put entirely too many people in jail. The war on marijuana, for instance, is an abysmal failure. It needs to be changed. That's as far as I'll go with it.
Okay. So, willing to tell us how you'll be voting on that proposition?
I will be voting for that.
Okay.
Because it's as I said, we put too many good people in jail.
Okay. And then the third one, on your campaign site here, you mentioned that Alaska's minimum wage should be raised to at least $12 an hour with a mechanism to keep pace with inflation.
Yes.
There's a proposition on the ballot to raise it not quite that high. It'll be over $10 with something to keep pace with inflation. Is that enough, or do you think that something more needs to be done beyond that?
I think it needs to be done more beyond that because we live in an expensive place. It's okay. Very expensive. I imagine working in Talkeetna in the summertime, you would need a good minimum wage because it does cost a lot to live here.
Right. It does. It does. In my experience, a lot of the folks who work the summer tourism type jobs tend to make a fair bit more than minimum wage because there is a lot of labor competition here.
There's
a labor shortage here, frankly.
Very good. That's good.
So in this instance, at least, there are exceptions to that, of course. But a lot of the folks I know in the tourism industry do make a fair bit above that.
That makes me happy.
But when it comes to the proposition, you said more needs to be done than is included in this. Are you still willing to support this increase?
Sure. Okay. It's a good step in the right direction.
Okay.
I just think it should be more.
Right. Okay. And then finally, maybe increasingly a moot point, but Pebble Mine?
Well, first of all, let's say that...
Or
Bristol Bay. Pebble is a gold and a copper mine.
Mm-hmm.
We know that salmon navigate with a little metal thing in their head, and I forget what the name of the bone is, but they
right.
navigate that way.
Mm-hmm.
Copper has been used for years as an anti-fouling paint on boats. It kills aquatic life. It's banned in a number of places down south. That's just one little issue. If the copper were to get out and get into that watershed, I would see that, or would probably believe that the salmon would quickly go away. And it's not just the salmon, it's the other part of that ecosystem, the animals that survive off that at the same time. That's a bad thing.
Okay.
And if you've never been to Bristol Bay and seen salmon up there, that's the most incredible thing I've personally witnessed in my life.
Wow. So my guest today is Neil Lacey, Democratic candidate for State House Seat 10. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 733-1200 or send an email to dj@ktna.org. So that does it for the ballot initiatives. Let's go back and talk a little bit more about economics and state budget, because as you mentioned previously, the state is running on deficit spending right now. Now, the state has substantial reserves at this moment, but we are in a period of deficit spending. And oil revenues are projected to not greatly improve, frankly, under either tax system that's on the table. So what needs to happen in order to get the state in the black again?
Well, first of all, as I said before, we need to quit giving out tax rebates and incentives to companies to do things. If you can't make your profit with your business model without a government handout, that's a problem. I personally see the legislature trying to spend down the congressional budget reserve and going after our permanent fund, which I'm definitely against.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I've talked to a lot of people in the know, and they see that as maybe the end game.
Interesting. And what's the reasoning behind that then?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you a straight
because,
answer on that.
Frankly, that seems like political suicide in this state.
You would think so, but I keep hearing people wanting to get, you know, get their fingers in the permanent fund.
I mean, there's a lot of money there. Is what, you know, $60 billion
mm-hmm.
with a B, billion. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of money there. But really,
I heard something a while back. I don't remember where I read it at, but it was something silly like they wanted to use the permanent fund to pay for some of these mega projects that we don't need.
And, you know, I've heard some suggestion of using the permanent fund as a means to pay for projects. I haven't heard it from anyone in office, but I have heard it from some other citizens of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that gets brought up under that is the gas pipeline. Mm-hmm. Now, you said a little bit earlier on that you think we need the gas pipeline.
Yes. You know, they have been warehousing our gas for years. And we need I would like to see a pipeline that would take into effect all our citizens from the North Slope that would feed the Bush area down to Fairbanks, into this area, up until Talkeetna, down on the Kenai Peninsula, so and then out to Valdez and the Copper River Basin. That's what we need.
So the proposal there's two proposals, of course, that are currently underway. One is ASAP, which is the Alaska Standalone Pipeline, and that the goal of that one would be to accomplish more or less what you're talking about, mm-hmm. to provide gas to areas that aren't currently served, including potentially including the Upper Valley. That's still to be determined. Mm-hmm. But the other one, the big project that also took a lot of the legislature's time this year, is the Alaska LNG project, which is potentially, by the legislature's estimates, up to a $65 billion project.
Yes.
Now, the state, the reason that's even on the table, of course, is that the big three, since ConocoPhillips has now come on board, the big three are behind it. Otherwise, the state, there's no way the state could fund that without spending the entire permanent fund, for instance.
No.
But with the involvement of the big three, the Democratic Party, a lot of the concern there on both sides of the state legislature was what degree of control the state has over that resource. So at that point, I mean, do you have concerns along those lines as well? Or
yes, I do, actually. And, you know, I watched a lot of that on Gavel to Gavel this year, and I kept trying to bang my head against the television because a lot of the Democrats are bringing up amendments that would ensure the state being taken care of in this whole thing. And they were just continuously voted down. And I get back to the fact that the oil companies are making a fortune off of us already. I don't see it as a problem for Alaska to maintain its control and its sovereignty on that project.
Okay.
Be a partner, but not be an equal partner, but not a colony, if you will.
Okay. So, the pipeline itself and the prospect of the pipeline is one thing that there was pretty much unanimous support for,
mm-hmm.
Which is not something you necessarily see in other states where you have the Democratic Party aligning very strongly behind the development of a project related to fossil fuel. Alaska is a unique case in that respect. And one thing you mention on your campaign site here is responsible development of natural resources. Where does that balance lie between developing these, you know, vast oil and gas reserves that we still have and protecting the environment in your eyes?
I use this as an example on my website. And I'm a safety person. The North Pole Refinery, for instance, back when they built that thing, a smart thing would have done is to excavate the entire area out, put monitoring wells in it, and then build that refinery over the top of it. They didn't do that. People would have thought that was crazy talk. Well, now we look and say, oh, well, maybe that wasn't such a bad idea after all. That plume is 3 miles long and a mile wide. And that, to me, is development gone wrong. somebody should have known, who was ever operating that, that there's a ratio between sulfidane and the product produced, and we've got a leak somewhere, but somebody was sleeping at the wheel. If you don't follow your risk management plans and your maintenance plans, things like that are going to happen. Every time I hear about a leak on the slope, I'm going, why didn't they inspect that pipe? Why wasn't it replaced? We know that oil, when it flows through a pipe, has other stuff in it that eats the pipe away, and it's just the way it is. So you can do it. It can be done, but it comes down to, well, do we do that maintenance this week or this month? Or, well, you know, it's been lasting us a while for a while. I've studied a lot of process technology, and it can be done.
Okay. So beyond that, oil and gas is obviously a big thing. We've touched on pebble, but mineral resources are also a growing industry within the state.
And
well,
it's a growing,
it was big and then down and then growing again.
It's a growing industry in this area. There's a number of mines over in the Petersville area now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can be done as long as you follow your plan and don't pollute the environment. It should be done, period. This is a resource state.
So, and also along similar lines, and my guest today on Sioux Valley Voice is Neil Lacey, Democratic candidate for House Seat 10 of the Alaska State Legislature. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 733-1200 or send us an email, dj@ktna.org. Along similar lines to responsible resource development, environmental protection is alternative energy.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as a state, like we've been discussing, we're reliant on petrochemicals and fossil fuel for our economy. At the same time, the state has a stated goal of renewable power by 2025.
Yes.
You've already said that you're opposed to Susitna-Wautana, mm-hmm. which the state views as a renewable power source. Some disagree, especially in this area, but the state was counting on that to kind of reach that goal. Where do you see that gap being filled as far as renewable energy?
Well, first of all, hydro projects, if they're the right type of a hydro project, are good. Bradley Lake, Terror Lake, Snetisham, Eklutna, those are all examples of good projects. They don't impact fish or in environment in the way that Susitna would.
I believe a lot of those are lake tap systems.
They are lake tap systems, and they are high alpine lakes. So, but in the same breath, I don't know if you know this, but over on Mount Spur, there's a company called Ormat that has bought up all those geothermal leases over there. And they're expecting to start drilling this year or next year, for a geothermal power plant that will put out between 50 and 100 megawatts. That is an example of a good power plant.
Okay.
As you pointed out, Susitna is an example of a bad one on so many levels.
I didn't point that out, but a lot of folks here think that way. But, you know, and it is this, you mentioned, before we came on the air, you and I were talking about Susitna-Wautana, and you know, this is a project that's come up a couple of times, and the state thus far has spent in this round about $200 million on research for this, and your opponent, or the incumbent Wes Keller, says he sat in that chair there and talked and kind of explained his reason for voting in favor of the $20 million in the most recent budget round, and that was that he said that he didn't commit to the project as an end goal, but said that it was important that we spend the money to continue the research on the river itself and on the fisheries in the river itself. Would you have made that same vote?
No. I think that's throwing good money after bad. We studied this in the 80s. They found out it was bad. I don't know. I remember how many millions they spent back then. Now we spent another $200 million more. This is money that could be put into infrastructure, schools, a number of different things. As I was driving up here, I would probably try and get some money for between mile 90 and, 98? And then from Talkeetna North?
They've actually been doing some work on that. Okay. It's part of the STIP, but
that kind of money that you spent on that could have been spent and made Talkeetna, you'd have some real nice infrastructure here.
Hmm. And, you know, that's another interesting point you bring up. As we've actually got a, looks like a tour group of ATVs going by the studio window here. Talkeetna has really grown as a tourist destination in a major way. We were discussing again before we came on the air the amount of people, the number of people that come through here on a given day in the summertime. And there, we do have there, the infrastructure, frankly, is getting to the point where it's having trouble keeping up. A lot of that is borough infrastructure, but at the same time, I think there are some folks here, especially when it comes to grant funding for the sewer and water system and things like that, who may potentially be looking to the state. Where do you see the state's role in helping a place like this that kind of finds itself swamped under in the summertime?
I think that, you know, upgrading the sewer and the water system is within the state's purview. The money that they've spent on other things could have been spent here. Wasilla gets all kinds of nice stuff, and I don't see this area of the valley getting a whole lot.
Okay. Well, we're just about at the bottom of the hour here, so we're going to take a quick break and return with my guest, Neil Lacey, discussing the race for House Seat 10. If you want to join the conversation in the second half, you can call 733-1200, send an email to dj@ktna.org, and we will be right back. And we're back for the bottom half of Sioux Valley Voice. My guest today is Neil Lacey, Democratic candidate for Alaska House Seat 10. We've been talking about a lot of the issues, including some locally relevant issues, things like Susitna-Watana as well as infrastructure. I'd like to get into talking a little bit about campaigning and then about some what-ifs. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can call 733-1200 or send me an email at dj@ktna.org. So let's talk a little bit about running for state office. It's something that obviously very few people experience firsthand. What's your experience been like so far? I saw, you know, you had recently had a kind of a campaign kickoff party about a week ago. But what does that look like running for state office?
Well, it's a lot of fundraising. It's a lot of questionnaires. It's a lot of meeting the people, which I love to do. If I had one thing about campaigning that I didn't like, it's signs.
Okay. I was just going to say, I haven't seen any signs.
I have plenty of signs, and they're going to be going up. But I think signs are a blight on the community. Mine are just as ugly as everybody else's. And if we could get away from that aspect of it, I'd be a little happier. But you have to look at the bigger picture.
Okay.
And during political season, there's a lot of money spread around. Printers, radio stations, people who make signs, all kinds of stuff. Lowe's, for instance, on those things that you have to put signs on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big change of money in the economy, and that's a good thing. But if I had one thing I didn't like, it'd be signs.
Okay, interesting. So, you know, the most recent data I saw looked back at the 2012 race for this seat, which was between the other two men who were running again for it this year, and that's Wes Keller and Roger Purcell. And Wes Keller's campaign raised a total of $27,000 mm-hmm. in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Is something like that an attainable goal for your campaign
sure
at this point?
Sure it is.
Can you tell me where you're at right now?
I'm about somewhere around 5,500 at this point, which is actually on par with everybody else in the race.
Right. Okay.
So. But I always need more. Advertising costs money. Signs cost money.
So, you know, and one of the other things that I think we've seen a lot of in the U.S. Senate race thus far is a lot of negativity and a lot of the candidates going after each other, even within the primary at this point. You've got the Republican primary candidates going after each other. You've been on the air with me for 35 minutes now, and the only thing you've had to say has to do with policy when it comes to your opponents. I mean, are you committed to running a positive campaign as far as...
I like to run a positive campaign. I like the voters to go and investigate your candidates. Google you. Look up all the different things. That's what you should do as a voter. I don't want to go negative. I think it's a bad thing. But who knows? I could get attacked in 15 minutes. I don't know.
Sure, sure.
But I don't like that kind of campaign.
And then, you know, let's get into a little bit of what if. You've said already that you think this is a winnable campaign
sure.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, polling for campaigns in Alaska is notoriously difficult, perhaps less so in the Valley than in other places, since most of the Valley's on the road system.
And it's very expensive for polling.
It is very expensive. So a lot of local campaigns just simply can't afford it.
Sure.
But if we go with the what ifs, and if you were to make it to Juneau,
mm-hmm.
In January when session begins, what's the first priority on your list for policy and for legislation?
We need to make sure that the state, the people, don't get shortchanged on the gas line deal.
Okay.
I said before, I don't like Susitna. Mm-hmm. That's going to be done if I have anything to do with it.
Okay. So, go ahead.
Medicaid expansion for our most vulnerable citizens who can't afford it. I'd like to look at the issue of wage theft. That goes on a lot.
Can you explain that?
Well, you work for somebody and they say, I'm not going to pay you. Go away. That's wage theft. It doesn't get reported. It doesn't get... taken care of as much as it needs to be.
Okay. Interesting. So, you know, the first thing you mentioned was making sure the state doesn't get shortchanged.
Yes.
We've talked a little bit about that, but, you know, specifically, how does that happen? How do we keep the state from, how would you keep the state from getting shortchanged?
Well, let me point out that if that happened, I would be on a stiff learning curve about oil and gas policy. And I think what happens in the state is people really don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't for long. It took me a long time to even get the basics from watching gavel to gavel on this thing for days on end.
Me too.
So the first thing I would do is educate myself on gas and oil issues.
Okay. And then come up with a plan from there or
yes.
rely on the, you know, at that point, you would at that point have... fellow Democrats in the House and the Senate who did come up with proposals this year,
I think we should look at all those proposals. Yes.
Okay. And then you've also, you know, something else that's an interesting what if that kind of it's kind of related there is, you know, we used to have a coalition government in the state. That's gone now. You do still have some Democrats who caucus with the majority, but for the most part, the coalition government of, you know, 10 years ago is gone. Is that something that you would want to try to bring back?
Yes, because you need to work across party lines to get something done. My politics are not so far away from a lot of the Republicans. I mean, as far as working together and seeing, you know, the education bill, that voucher bill got shot down. And that was the moderate Republicans that helped that happen.
Right, right. Yeah. It actually never made it to the floor for a vote because the anticipation was that there weren't enough votes to get it passed. So, okay. And I mean, in a climate nationally and somewhat statewide as well, where you do have increasing polarization of the parties, I mean, do you see that as realistic to bring back that? You said you'd want to, which is admirable, but is it possible?
Yeah, I think if we had enough, and I think we can get a bunch of Democrats in the legislature this year, and I think that's a possibility.
Okay. But you think...
I think the problem with politics is you don't work together, and you get this gridlock like we see down in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad for everybody. And at least on the state level, our state laws affect us here and now. Federal laws, they do affect us, don't get me wrong, but state laws affect us here and now. And we need to work towards that.
Okay. My guest is Neil Lacy, Democrat candidate for House Seat 10, which includes the Upper Valley here. If you want to join in on our conversation, we've got about 20 minutes left. You can give us a call, 733-1200, or send an email, dj@ktna.org. Related, you said, you know, federal laws do affect us here, and that brought something to mind that... the incumbent, Wes Keller, is big on, and that is the concept, and Republicans in the state in general are big on, is federal overreach. Where do you see the state of federal overreach in Alaska right now? Is the federal government overreaching its bounds?
I was reading something the other day about the EPA and water quality,
mm-hmm.
and that the state needs to take that over. I don't have a problem with the state taking it over, but the end goal, the end game should be making sure that our water is not polluted. Whether it be a mixing zone from a cruise ship that's putting coliform fecal matter into our into our oceans, which our fish eat, that we eat. I guess it depends on who you talk to.
Okay, so the result is more important than who does it effectively. Okay, we do have a caller on the line. Jeff has a question about Medicaid expansion. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, what are the chances of Medicaid expansion happening in the state of Alaska, and what can we do to make that happen so people who don't have any money can get health care? Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air. On the air. Okay, bye.
Thanks, Jeff.
Well, I think you brought up a very good point. We have a lot of our citizens who can't afford health care, and Medicaid expansion is something we need. If I got to Juneau, I would propose a bill that would expand what the governor said no to.
Okay, so step one in your mind is vote for you in November.
Step one in my mind is if I get elected, which I'm hoping to.
Right.
That's going to be one of the jobs,
number one. So, I mean, and that's an interesting point, and we touched on Medicaid expansion a bit, but like you said, the governor's already said no. If Governor Parnell's, to pose another what if to you, if Governor Parnell is reelected, and if you were elected, and you're likely to face, I would say, given the nature of the legislature, barring a major sea change in the legislature, a lot of resistance to that Medicaid expansion. And if it were to get through, I would say the odds are decent that were Governor Parnell reelected, he would probably veto it based on his position. Do you see it that way?
What I see is the people who are elected officials who have health care mm-hmm. paid for, and they don't care about anybody else. And that is my problem.
Okay. So you would still propose it just to press the issue, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
Nothing ventured's nothing gained.
Okay. Fair enough. And, you know, and that is something that happens a lot. You've mentioned a couple of times watching Gavel to Gavel. I watched a lot of Gavel to Gavel during session as well. And what I saw a lot of is, and this may be a consequence of the dissolution of the coalition government, but a lot of the time you would have Democratic lawmakers in Juneau proposing amendments, proposing legislation that they probably had to know was not going to make it. And in fact, there were some remarks made to that effect during while speaking in favor of some of this stuff. I mean, how effective do you see a strategy like that? You know, because at that point, the legislator is able to say to their constituents, look, I'm doing this for you. This is what I think you want. But at the same time, they know it's not going to happen. Is there frustration?
Oh, I'm sure there's frustration. And we'll come to the oil and gas one. I think they had 14 different amendments, mm-hmm. and every one of them were voted down.
And there was an amendment on the budget to strip the $20 million from Susitna-Wetana as well.
And that passed. I was watching a number of the Democratic legislators do that, and I thought to myself, they're trying.
Okay.
I mean, it might be shoveling sand against the tide, but they were doing something.
Okay. And so, I mean, and so that, to you, that's a worthwhile effort.
Sure it is.
For the sake of trying, essentially.
Sure it is.
Okay. So, we've got about 15 minutes left. We do still have time for callers, 733-1200 if you want to join us. Let's talk about the Upper Valley.
Okay.
And I guess District 10 as a whole, which, you know, as we've discussed, is kind of an odd shape. Not quite as odd as the shape of our Senate district this year, but which extends all the way down near Valdez and Lake Lucille. And mm-hmm. But our House district, you mentioned earlier that you don't think enough is happening for the Upper Valley.
For years I've thought that. All the new roads that we are getting in Wasilla, I don't see a whole lot of new roads here.
Hmm.
I mean, they fixed, what, between mile 83 and 90-something?
Last year.
Last year.
And there are plans in place to fix up past Trapper Creek toward Cantwell.
It's taken for years to do that.
It is taking years.
It shouldn't take years. I've always thought that you shouldn't be penalized for where you live. And I think that's happened in this area.
Okay.
I know that in my area, Schrock Road hasn't been paved since the early 80s, maybe.
Okay.
Late 70s, early 80s. It's horrible. People crash there all the time. But yet they're doing other things in other places.
This is a little further south of the district, but something else, another big project that is a major topic of discussion is Kinnick Arm Bridge. Where do you lie on Kinnick Arm Bridge? Do we need it? Is it practical?
Well, first of all, I have a problem with us financing a bridge, giving it to a foreign country, and then a foreign corporation, and them turning around and charging us to using it. If we're going to pay for it, it should be free. Now, they haven't thought about the other part of that, the infrastructure from, say, Wasilla out to where that bridge is going to be. That should be at least a four-lane road all that way. Now, it's actually faster to drive from Merrill Field out to Wasilla than it would be if you crossed over that bridge and went Point McKinsey Road all the way to KGB and then into Wasilla.
Mm-hmm.
And that road, by the way, is a safety corridor.
Mm.
Because there's been so many people killed out there.
The KGB corridor?
Yes.
And so, you know,
I guess what, in a nutshell, no, I'm not for that.
Not in favor of the bridge.
I'm not in favor of spending that kind of money on that.
What about favor? What about a development in Port McKenzie area as a whole?
You know, I've been
the rail spur.
They're building the rail spur right now. Mm-hmm. I was at a borough assembly meeting last year, and they have got all of the abutments there. They're building bridges. I own some land at mile 60 and a half.
Mm.
And I was driving by there this morning, and I saw where they're starting to put the bridge through there. That's probably a good idea.
Okay.
Is the port going to be making money? I don't know.
Right.
There's a 30-foot tidal surge in there.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Well, and I, you know, that is kind of the idea behind it. And one of the things that the borough has really pushed for with development in Port McKenzie is saying, you know, if you get the rail spur, if you get this transportation corridor to Anchorage, that that helps the development there, and then potentially, you know, increased income for the borough via property tax and things like that. But as far to kind of bring us back up to the Upper Valley again, you know, we do have the school in the high school. Sioux Valley is relatively new.
Yes.
Because Sioux Valley burned down.
Yes.
And it had, a new one had to be built. Talkeetna Elementary is a relatively new school.
Yes, it is.
Perhaps less so for some of the other schools in the area.
Trapper Creek and Willow. And
right.
Willow, yes.
So what sort of, what sort of plan for renovating, you know, and updating technology within the schools and the schools themselves, since education is a big topic?
Well,
for you,
actually, they have been, the school district, when I was on the school board, they had a plan to link with MTA mm-hmm. through fiber optics all the schools together. Now, I don't know to the extent it's coming up this way, but we have internet at all of our schools.
Right.
Now, and it will be expanding over the years.
Okay. So, good step in the right direction.
Yes, it's a very good step in the right direction.
So, as far as what do you think is within the district as a whole, including down in the core area and up here, what would be the biggest priority for you as a take home, as either whether it be through appropriation or legislation, not for the necessarily for the state as a whole, but specific to District 10, what is the biggest need here?
I see transportation as a very big need. We have some roads that are substandard. Have you tried to get out of Wasilla on a Friday afternoon heading north? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get more. Somewhere I read a couple of years ago that it was a planning study that said in the next 5-10 years, there might be 20,000 people more living north of Wasilla heading this direction.
Hmm.
So transportation is a big thing.
Including?
I think we need to expand the state troopers. I don't think we have enough state troopers around. I don't think we have enough emergency services. I think that we should pay our emergency medical and fire people a lot more than we do. I would be in favor of proposing a minimum wage for firefighters and EMS people.
Okay. And, you know, that of course, there are issues related to that that came up at the borough level over the last year or
yes.
so. More toward benefits than toward hourly wage. But, okay, so transportation. And so would that include, in your mind, the widening or improvement of the Glen Highway?
Yes. Yes, it would. That coming out of Anchorage, for instance, if you have one accident and it's snowing, you could be on that highway for up to 6-7 hours waiting to go somewhere. Yes, we do need to make some changes
okay.
there.
Because that's one thing that's been brought up since you said you're not in favor of the bridge. Basically, something has to happen. The consensus seems to be something has to happen, whether it be the bridge or the expansion of the Glen Highway.
And, you know, the railroad, recently I was reading something about the railroad and a commuter service between Anchorage and the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the infrastructure to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should consider an elevated train. Maybe we should have a place that train could go to that people could park at. But the thing with the train is now, it's not convenient for people. It just goes downtown.
Right.
If you could truly do something to alleviate congestion, you have to make it convenient on both ends of the equation. I could see maybe a commuter train all the way up to Talkeetna that would take you into the Valley.
Okay. So something along
that's way down the road.
Right. But as far as vision for the future and that...
We could do something. We could take the $200 million they've wasted on Susitna and do something neat with our infrastructure.
So, and I guess that we've just got a few minutes left, but where I want to kind of conclude with is your vision for the future of Alaska. And because obviously if you're running, like I said earlier, there's something you think must be something you think that's not being done right. So if you had your vision for the future of Alaska, what does that look like?
I would like to see orderly, responsible resource development that does not leave our children a mess. I guess that's my...
Okay. And I guess that gives them their fair share to go with what you mentioned earlier as far as tax systems and mm-hmm. things like that go. You know, as we look also as we look forward into the future of Alaska, there will eventually come a day where we do run out of fossil fuels here.
Yes, we do. Yes, we will.
it's inevitable. What happens at that point, and how do we prepare for that? Well, even if it's decades away, what does the state need to be doing now to prepare for that?
Well, we need to consolidate our renewable energy resources. That Fire Island Wind Project is a real good example. There's wind everywhere. We could have wind power every place. Mm. We could have good electricity.
And so, I mean, that would help alleviate the energy concern, but I'm talking more of the financial issue for the state, because right now you've got 85 to 90% of the state budget funded by taxes.
I can see there's going to be some serious decisions that we're going to have to make, and we should be thinking about this on this level instead of way down the road. I would say that we need to have a sustainable budget and a sustainable amount of income from our resources.
Okay.
And nurse that, as opposed to our boom and bust that we've had in years past.
Okay. So, and then as we've got just a few minutes left here, I want to give you the opportunity to kind of give a parting message, if you'd like, or to kind of summarize again your why people in the Upper Valley should consider you.
You know, I identify with the Upper Valley. I don't see the Upper Valley as the Upper Valley. I see it as part of the bigger picture, my district. Because this district is called Rural Wasilla, which I think is wrong. It should be like maybe Matsu West. I want to provide a state that we can give our children, that they don't have to worry about things.
Okay. So looking to the future then is mm-hmm. the major thrust. So, and then if people want to get in touch with you, get in touch with your campaign, how do they go about that?
You can go to democracy.com/Neil Lacey. You can call me at 373-7896, which is my home phone. My cell phone is 355-6093, or you can send me an email at strval@mtaonline.net.
Okay. So if you want to get in touch with Neil Lacey and talk about some of the issues that maybe we didn't get to today, there's a number of ways that you can do that. With the last couple of minutes here, we do plan on having all of the candidates for House Seat 10 as well as Senate Seat E, I think it is now. That changed as well. So if you're wondering why we weren't talking about House District 7, it's because as part of the redistricting plan, we are now in House District 10 and Senate Seat E as opposed to Senate Seat D. The final plans for which candidates will be on which week are still kind of in the process, but right now it looks like we're going to be doing the three candidates for the House first and then the two candidates for the Senate a little bit closer to election time. So that is pretty close to just about all the time we've got today for Sioux Valley Voice. My guest has been Neil Lacey, Democratic candidate for State House Seat 10. If you missed part of our live broadcast or you want to listen again, the program will be re-airing tonight at 7 p.m., or you can listen anytime at ktna.org. Neil Lacey, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. I've had a nice time up here. It's a beautiful day.
So, and that is all for this edition of Sioux Valley Voice. My name's Philip Manning. Have a great day.